Welcome to the AP Now podcast, the podcast that covers trends, insights, and emerging issues impacting every accounts payable function. Your host, Mary Schaefer, is the founder of AP Now, a B2B digital information and learning company focused on all issues related to AP. Stay tuned as Mary and her guests discuss the business intelligence you need to ensure a cost-effective, technologically efficient, fraud-resistant, regulatory-compliant accounts payable function. Without further ado, let's dive right in.
Welcome to the eighth episode of the AP Now podcast. I'm your host, Mary Schaefer, and in this episode, we're joined today by Ellen Leith from across the pond. Today's show is brought to you by Stamply, a leader in AI-powered invoice automation. Welcome, Ellen. Perhaps you could start off by telling us a little bit about your background and how you came to form the purchase-to-pay network. Notice I didn't say procure-to-pay.
Well, yeah, it's purchase-to-pay over here most of all, Mary. But yes, thanks for having me on the podcast today. So yes, I'm Ellen Leith, as you said, and I run the purchase-to-pay network. I've got a background in finance, economics, research and analytics, a little bit of marketing and journalism as well. And I realized back in 2008 that there was a real gap in the market for somewhere to go to get some information that organizations and professionals needed. At that time, some relevant information, it was there, but it was distributed against lots of different places and it was kind of hard to find. So, on top of that, you know, many people working in accounts payable and finance, there's a kind of assumption that it wasn't really a career in itself, but a stepping stone on the way to somewhere else. So I wanted to create an organization where professionals could feel valued and pick up all the latest information to really further their careers. So the P2P network, or PPN as we tend to call it, is a single source for professionals to come to find all the latest news and information across P2P in relation to things like new tech, new processing ideas, and all the latest news. We run events, webinars, research, and masterclasses, that kind of thing. Okay. So that was really the aim, Mary.
Okay. I like when you said make professionals feel valued. Okay. So moving on, I know you've got a lot of good insights. Could you tell us what you see as the biggest issues impacting P2P today and what you expect them to be in the near future?
Yeah, sure. So I think we run a series of research papers over the past sort of 8 years, really, and you really get a good idea of what the trends are over that time, and you can look back and obviously predict things for the future too. So, at the moment, the key five things that I think that are really impacting P2P are analytics, business partnering, digitization, risk, and CSR as well. I think it's a really exciting time for the industry. You know, things are changing at a faster pace than they ever have been at any time over the last decade, I think. And I think that that's partly to do with the advances in technology, also partly to do with people just generally becoming more aware of the opportunities that there are available and what happens to the business overall as they do things differently. So, I mean, I picked out these top five, which I think are currently most important. And I've sort of listed them as analytics, business partnering, digitization, risk, and CSR. But they're not really listed in order of importance, really, because I think that each are going to have a big impact in the industry in their own different and actually quite interlinked ways. What we can do with analytics and how we understand and use them is going to have a massive impact on an organization's business outcomes. And then if you couple that with business partnering, that's going to increase the levels of visibility, that up to now really haven't been possible.
Okay.
And then, you know, on top of that, with greater digitization and advances in technology, we're really going to be able to pull down on that data and do more things with it. But, you know, we're still going to face risk, and sometimes that risk is going to be more difficult or set to increase. perhaps when that becomes more, that processes that we do become more complex.
Yep.
And you know, business isn't an island,
right.
So we're going to be affected by the changes, but in the way that the world operates as well. So how we're perceived as a business is going to really matter. So things like our CSR, corporate social responsibility, is no longer, it's not going to be like it's nice to have fluffy thing, but an essential part of business strategy as well.
Okay. Would you mind talking about each of these in a little bit more detail? Maybe we could start off with the issue that's near and dear to my heart, analytics.
Yeah, sure. So the future's all about data. How companies capture it and how they use it is going to be massively important. Predictive analytics, it has the potential to really highlight some of that powerful knowledge that sits within the data. By analyzing the patterns found in transactional information, and then you can predict the potential future outcomes from that. And that then enables more proactive decision making, and ultimately what we're all looking for, it then drives competitive advantage. But what that doesn't mean is that you measure everything. It's more important to focus and concentrate on 5 or 6 KPIs than to do something, and then actually to do something with the results, that it is to measure, say, 30 KPIs, yep, and do absolutely nothing with them. It's not a box ticking exercise. You know, some people, mm-hmm, think, well, do you know what? We measure all these analytics. We've done that. We're a fantastic organization because look at all these analytics. You know, you think, well, what are you actually doing with the results of
right.
that? And that's more important. You know, some organizations set up teams specifically to look at analytics,
yes,
or to have that as part of their role, but that obviously depends on the size and the structure of the company. But as I said, I think it's most important to focus on just a few of those KPIs and really do something with them. And the trick, I guess, is to think, well, which KPIs for your organization are
right.
going to be the most important ones?
Because right. otherwise you're just wasting your time to churning
yeah.
out numbers. You could
exactly.
be using
you
it
think,
to,
well, what are you doing it for?
Right, right. On this side of the pond, I know that the most in-demand job right now is that of data scientists. You know, people who can analyze the data. Okay, we could talk forever about that. I was really I was really interested when you started talking about partnering, because one of the issues that we like to talk about on this side, which seems to be the same as you, is accounts payable, actually getting a seat at the table and being looked at as more than just transactional, you know, processing the invoices.
Yeah.
And when you started talking about yeah. business partnering, it looks like we're on the same page.
Yeah, and it's something which has really changed over the last few years, because in the past, and I suppose, you know, to be honest, it's still the case with quite a few organizations, but the different areas of finance, AP, procurement, and treasury would sit in their own separate silos, and really they wouldn't really have very much to do with each other. But those days, they are changing. Partly, as I think I mentioned earlier, as a result of some of that enabling technology, but also because of a culture shift and a realization that lots of good things can happen if you do collaborate. It's not just about the, obviously good things like saving money is a good driver, but it's not just about that. It's also about forming a culture within an organization that's cooperative, mm-hmm, and actually getting the most out of people because they work well together. Over the last 3 years, as I said, we've run items of research going back for quite a few years. But over the last 3 years, we've really seen an explosion of companies where teams collaborate and work together. And last year, in the last survey that we ran, we found that 39% of organizations said that they actually work closely together most of the time.
Oh, that's great.
It still leaves a fairly yeah. large, you know, proportion of mm-hmm. companies where that's not the case. And of course, you know, each person's or each organization's perception of what working well together looks like is going to be a bit different. But it's a massive shift over the last few years.
And yeah.
it's becoming more and more common to see organizations using metrics from one department to work with and sort of to find solutions for use in
yes.
another department. for example, you can look at a procurement contract, for example. Mm-hmm. It might have had very little to do with accounts payable in the past, and some of those financial arrangements around payment terms could have been held as just a relationship with the supplier and the procurement team. But now, with the growth of e-invoicing and mm-hmm. the ability to use financing methods on the back of it, of that e-invoicing, and better processing like dynamic discounting, for example, mm-hmm. a buyer and the supplier can work well together to address any working capital crunch that there is. And to be able to really do that effectively, the different areas of P2P need to be able to work together closely to be able to do that. So it's actually raising the visibility, and it's a combination of all of the things coming together to create a circle, really, because yeah. you've got the technology that provides that, that's driving the culture, mm-hmm. That's then creating these links. And once you get together and actually form these links, you can actually feel, do you know what, you get things that you weren't anticipating out of that proactive relationship.
Yep. Yep, and I like to say
and quite that, often it's where they're headed up as well, headed up by somebody. Sorry, Mary. Yeah,
AP has the data that other departments need, or at least some of it. Okay, yes, if you don't mind, exactly. we have a brief word from our sponsor. AP professionals know invoices are easy to lose, and it takes time to track down approvers while having to code, log, cross-reference, verify, reconcile, and cut checks, all while staying compliant. Stamply simplifies all of that. When invoices enter the system, Stamply's AI, called Billy the Bot, immediately gets to work by proposing GL codes, approvers, and flagging issues like PO mismatches and potential duplicates. AP simply confirms the information is correct and submits the invoice for approval. Here's the best part. Stamply fixes the disconnected communications between approvers, AP, and vendors. With Stamply, conversations are centered around each invoice, and anyone can be invited to the conversation, getting to an approval decision up to 5 times faster. Visit stamply.com/APnow. See for yourself how your team can work smarter, not harder. That's stamply.com/APnow. Okay, Ellen, thanks for taking the break with us. You talk about digitization, and I have to be honest, that's not a term we use over here that frequently, so I'm really curious to see what you mean by it and how it will impact the P2P environment.
Sure, okay. So I think in the years ahead, we've seen some advances in technology and growing dramatically in the last few years, but in the years ahead, things like cloud-based ERP, automation, and cognitive innovation is going to continue to grow. And as that happens, it's going to create opportunities to massively simplify processes and free people up. And if you add new technologies like RPA, robotic processing automation, that is, and AI and things like blockchain to the mix, it's only going to accelerate that trend. And as that transition picks up speed, us as humans are going to be freed up to add more value. Mm-hmm. So it's no longer just about processing those transactions that maybe historically some of us were just felt like we were doing and our teams were doing, but actually adding some strategic value. And some organizations get it. They fully and completely recognize the potential for something like e-invoicing, for example, and how that has the possibility to really transform the business. Other businesses, really, they just don't get it. And those who don't get it only see invoicing as a potentially faster way of paying suppliers, but maybe with added implementation and process change costs. And anyway, they might turn around and say that they're quite happy doing things the way that they are. So they then just push all of that to one side. But if they do, they and as you know, Mary, they're going to be missing a trick because it's so much broader than that. E-invoicing, implementation, it's not just a question of being able to pay all your suppliers the terms. If you do it properly, it's going to be a means to altogether more efficient machine. You strip paper out of the system, introduce things like reporting capabilities into processes, and it just means that organizations can reduce their exposure to fraud, error, risk, and are also going to be able to gain some really deep insight into their business at the same time. And so whether that's by design or default even, the more visibility that you have, it has the ability to shine a light onto that wider P2P process, and that's really end-to-end. And that's what the digitization is about. It's actually just transforming that whole end-to-end process and minimizing the amount of manual touch that there maybe has been historically. Because wherever you've got any manual process, you've got the ability to, or not the ability, but you've got the possibility for errors to creep in. You know, you really don't mm-hmm. want to have an Excel spreadsheet
right.
sitting in the middle of a process, because as soon as you have something like that, where's the visibility gone? You know, and if you can't
right.
see it, then where, you know, you, how can you possibly understand what that transaction means to you as a business? You just really can't. Not in the same way that a fully digitized process can.
Yep. I bet you we could spend an hour or two just talking about that, but we won't. So we and I'm
not
sure
a day.
You do too. Fraud has become a huge issue over here.
Yeah.
So I'm
yeah.
really anxious to hear what you have to say about this. Has it become a bigger issue over there thanks to the technology?
Well, it really has, and in fact, it's something that we talk about quite frequently, because despite the increased awareness of fraud in purchase to pay, sometimes it really does seem like it's impossible to prevent it. Almost every week, and really, you know, probably every week at PPN, we report on some fraudulent activity in the news across an organization's purchase to pay department,
mm-hmm.
and nearly always they're very similar. You know, you think, well, how are they able to perpetrate these frauds
right.
when they're very much the same as the one we reported on last week? And on the one hand, that's kind of depressing. But on the other, you could say that it offers a little bit of hope, because fraudsters are often opportunistic. You know, they
yes.
probably haven't gone into an organization thinking, do you know what, I'm going to defraud this company of X number of millions or thousands of pounds, or in your case, dollars.
Mm-hmm.
But they find an opportunity to do something, and they think, well, they got away with it once, and they carry on doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But in most cases, that activity follows a pattern. And every activity that follows a pattern leaves a trail of clues. So all an organization has to do is look out for them, notice them, and know how to act when those clues start to add up. But the key thing there is the word all the company has to do, because too often
just
organizations, they just fail to thoroughly investigate their processes to
right.
check for any inherent risk or weaknesses, sometimes relying too heavily on outdated technology, or perhaps it's a system that they've inherited to do that work for them. You know, there's never going to be an anti-fraud toolkit that you can just plug in and simply
right.
deploy. Every organization is different, and as technology changes, so does the fraudster's capability.
Right.
But there are a few things that you can do to minimize the risk. I don't know whether you want me to talk about any of those,
just briefly, because I do want to hear what you have to say about your last item, which looks very interesting.
Mm. Yeah, sure. So, people are familiar with it already, but just some really key things to highlight in terms of look out for in terms of fraud. You know, things like, even just simple things like transactions which are a little bit out of the ordinary, maybe
yes.
they're being done late at night or something,
mm-hmm.
Some unclear reasons for a particular service,
yes.
Perhaps maybe above average payments to a particular supplier,
mm-hmm.
things like rounded up
yep.
or rounded down invoice, maybe just slightly below the approvals
yep.
level, things like that. And of course, obviously, the classic things in terms of behavior as well.
Mm-hmm.
If you suddenly see an upgrade in lifestyle, one of the more interesting fraudulent activities that you reported on a while ago, they start to, again, as I said, it's opportunistic, but then when it goes on for a certain length of time, they become blasé, and there's nearly always something which highlights it.
Yep.
In this particular case, this lady had a very extravagant wedding. I think she was the finance manager for an organization, and she had a very extravagant wedding, including some ring bearing owls.
Oh, dear. A Harry Potter fan, huh?
Well, you never know. So quite strange. But things like that, you know, you can obviously not quite as bad as that, but
right.
Things like a new car and things like that, maybe coming into late, it's work very early, leaving late.
Yeah.
I think there's signs to look out for as well as the processing activities.
So what we like to say over here, because we've had a slew of really odd new frauds, is anytime anything looks different, it's different than what you normally did in the past, stop, ask, verify.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
And again, we could probably talk about that
oh,
and, the very, and the various activities that go on against fraud, because, you know, it's endless, isn't it, the possibilities.
Yep. And actually the creativity of some of the fraudsters, they come up with things I would never think of. Okay. I want to hear what you have to say about corporate social responsibility.
Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a flip side to what we've also uncovered in our research is a skills gap which lies in some of an organization's process, and that's a slightly different topic which we'll go into maybe another time. But it's the flip side to it is the need to keep and attract the right type of people to the business, so that we can make sure that we are growing competitively and with innovation. So those who keep up to date with the latest trends and fully understand how to generate the best outcomes for their business are going to find themselves in demand. So with a growing understanding or at executive level of the real value of procure-to-pay functions, some of those practitioners will find themselves with a much louder voice in their organization. So the companies that offer flexible, agile environments with a culture of inclusivity are going to be better placed to attract the right talent. And increasingly, that's going to include those companies with a strong corporate social responsibility charter. And that's especially the case when you're looking to recruit Generation Z, as we say over here, and Generation Z, and millennials. So according to a research report that was recently done by Robert Half, 30% of Generation Z are willing to take around about a 10 to 20% pay cut if it means that they can work with a company whose ethics reflect their own. Mm. So companies like IBM, Google, Johnson & Johnson, and Netflix, they've already doubled down on that CSR program. Google, for example, allows its workers to devote up to 20 hours of work time to volunteer efforts each year. And you know, everyday products bought and used globally have been made by people who are in forced work labor conditions.
Yes.
And there's an estimated 20 to 30 million forced laborers, in global supply chains today.
Ooh.
But we live in a digitally connected and data-driven economy. We've got the tools and the information that we need to uncover slavery and to end it. And those organizations who don't act on that are going to increasingly risk reputational damage and ultimately legal challenge as well.
That's very interesting. I bet you we could talk a lot about that.
Exactly.
We have a little time. So it was great spending time with you, as it always is. It's unfortunate that you're so
Thanks,
far
Mary,
away.
You too.
do you have any concluding thoughts that you'd like to share with the audience?
Yeah. So we've already established that today it's like a very fast-paced business environment. And the most successful organizations are going to be those that are quick to take advantage of improved business and technological capabilities. Organizations that can connect these and achieve a true digital transformation are those that are going to be able to gain that competitive advantage. And there's still a certain amount of fascination, fear, and excitement about the new technology. You just look at robotics and all the noise that there is around AI, for example. That people wonder whether it will help elevate the capabilities of those working within the technology or with that technology, or will it actually put them out of a job? While it's likely that some of those positions will shift, the most likely scenario is that technology will augment rather than replace. So by leveraging analytics, dashboards and reports, some of those key stakeholders can really drill down into the data that's going to be so important across purchase to pay in the years ahead. They can analyze the issues and uncover all the opportunities that can come out of that data. And those opportunities, both for themselves in terms of their career and how they act on that and implement those outcomes, and also for the businesses that they work for. So those are my concluding thoughts, Mara. I just think that there are massive opportunities both for the business and for people in terms of their own careers, and it's up to those individuals to actually recognize those advantages when they appear and to run with it, do something with it. Don't ignore it or pretend it's not going to happen, because it is going to happen in terms of technology, and you have to run with it.
It makes me crazy when I see people putting, sticking their head in the sand, as we like to say over here, and just ignoring it. Because I agree with you. Yeah. I think this is a massive opportunity, and it's a very interesting time to be working. Well, thank you for joining us, Ellen, and I hope you'll come back and talk some more in the future. And I'd like to thank
you. I certainly will.
Okay. I'd like to thank the audience for listening to this podcast, and as well as to thank our sponsor, Stamply, a leader in AI-powered invoice automation. If you like this podcast, please take a moment to rate the episode, review the episode, give the episode a thumbs up, subscribe to the series, or even better, share it with your community on LinkedIn, Facebook, or wherever. To be alerted to new episodes, please visit www.ap-now.com and sign up for our free twice-a-week e-zine. It also contains tips and news of upcoming AP Now events and article postings. Thanks, everyone. Hope to see you soon on another AP Now podcast.